Welcome to the Sidelines. I'm Matt Dolliff. I'm back with Ty Anderson for another week. Another week where things here and there seem to change, but the general outlook on the world and the world of sports doesn't seem to be changing much. Hopefully, it'll change greatly for the better within the next few weeks, because it seems like we're actually going to get sports back. Keyword there, though, is seems. What isn't changing, there are some things that aren't changing for good reasons. And one of the things that continues to hold true is that Massachusetts is kicking the shit out of COVID-19. It's honestly looking like we're going to have to be the hub city for all four major sports at some point. It's going to be the Olympics times 10. Because these people in Florida and California and other places just can't get their shit together. I'm going to refer to a tweet from this morning by Kyle Kalinske, who is a popular podcast, radio show, whatever it is, called Secular Talk. He says, Japan has less than 1,000 COVID deaths. Japan has less than 1,000 COVID deaths. They never went into full economic shutdown. They have an unemployment rate of 2.6%. How did they do it? Virtually everybody wears a mask. Americans have no idea how fucking stupid they look on the world stage. Completely agree with Kyle's take there. And but what makes me feel good, I'm going to tear my rotator cuff, patting myself on the back here. That's how it looks in Massachusetts. Pretty much everybody's wearing a mask. It's exceedingly rare to see someone out in public, even with a mask like hanging halfway off their face. Everybody's taking the mask thing seriously. And you could throw out the tired old argument, correlation does not equal causation. But all I know is everybody's wearing a mask. We're doing really well against the virus. I think it was 15 new deaths and 100-something new cases yesterday. The 7-day positive test rate in Mass, 1.9% compared to 19% in Florida. So, E-Rod and Bobby Dalbec of the Red Sox testing positive for the virus notwithstanding, we're doing a great job against the virus, so how do you feel, Ty? Have you seen anybody not wearing a mask in public?
No, and you know why? I'm telling you, this is why. It's because we live in Massachusetts where it's only nice out for 2 months out of the year. And so we don't take the summer for granted like everyone else, where it's always warm. And they're like, oh, I'm just going to go outside because it's always warm. No. Massachusetts, we realize if we lose these months, we lose it all, baby. That is like that. You lose everything if you lose July and August. So we're probably going to do it anyways. But I think that I just think that there's something about Massachusetts that they understand the value of time outside and being in time with you know, friends and family or whatever. And so if you tell them, hey, you need to do this if you want to hang out with your friends again, go, you know, go by the seaport and waste a bunch of money on a restaurant that's not that good. You need to do this. And they're like, okay, I'm going to do that now. So that's why I think it's happening. But I don't know. I everywhere I go, I see someone wearing it. I've graduated to the point where if I go for a walk through my neighborhood, I don't wear one, but I bring it with me so that if I do encounter somebody I walk by, I can throw it on. You know what I mean?
Just yeah,
so
that's what I do.
So they're comfortable. But yeah, I think every store I've gone in, it's like now no one even cares. No one even like complains about it now. I just throw it on like, all right, gotta do what we gotta do.
Right. Yeah. You can contrast that with New Hampshire, which I think is also doing well overall. I think most of the Northeast is doing well overall. But I went to Walmart to pick up some stuff in Plastow, New Hampshire, and maybe half the people were wearing masks. The other half, I unfairly judged them as, you know, creatures because they were walking around with their mouths and their droplets just hanging all over the place. So I was like, what are we doing here, folks? So I think there's going to be a spike in New Hampshire because apparently half the people aren't listening. I didn't get it because I thought Walmart was requiring people to wear masks to come in. So maybe they wore a mask in and then took the mask off after they came in thinking, like, what are they going to do, throw me out?
And, yeah, I saw
it. It's scary because humans are just smart enough to do something that stupid. So
I saw a girl using her own hair as a mask, and I went, no, that's not okay. You can't do that. That's not an option.
I would accept that, though. That's acceptable. Acceptable over exposing your face. I just don't get it. I don't like... That's why all these people are out there trampling all my freedoms, making me wear a mask. But you tell NFL players they have to stand for the national anthem, they can't kneel. It's like, well, you know, they don't have the freedom to do that. They know it's a private corporation. Why would they infringe on that right now?
Yeah, there's also, there's that, and then you have, you know, people tweeting from their phones that track them everywhere they go. You know, like, buddy, you already lost the freedom battle, man. It happened. It's over. I hate to let us all know that it's over. We all have tracking devices on us constantly. It is what it is, man. Don't know what to say.
That goes back to the Elon Musk thing. It's like, well, technically we already do have chips. We might as well have computer chips implanted in us already because we carry our phones everywhere we go. And a lot of us, most of us, me, can't really imagine what it would be like if we just lost our phone. If I suddenly like lost my phone in the ocean or drop it in the toilet or something, that would suck.
I would get a flip phone. You get a flip phone and you go back to doing that thing where you would text your tweets to like a specific number and it would just tweet them.
Yeah, that shit might as well be Morse code at this point.
I know, but that's what we need. That's the best thing you can do.
I'm tempted.
A flip phone is like, I think like $10 a month. I think they still sell them and they're like dirt cheap.
I might get the small, like I'm on track to get a new iPhone soon. I might get like, I think they have like a small low storage model that's cheaper. Because I might just look at it and say, like, I do need a handful of apps, those that make my life easier. But I don't need, like, all the space to store fucking my whole life in it. So maybe that's the route I'll take. Going back to a flip phone is sort of like, it seems almost too primitive at this point, the amount of texting I do. And how used to it I am with the keyboard. But now we got these people walking around with their phones in a goddamn holster and pulling it out to record people and shame them. I mean, that's been the main reason I wear a mask for a long time. But now that we're seeing results, you know, now I understand. Now I understand why it's good for other people. So the funny thing about the mask is that it's meant to protect other people from you. That's what the anti-mask people don't seem to understand. These people getting filmed, recorded in stores, it's like, you know, maybe you deserve to get exposed to as the selfish asshole you're being.
Mm-hmm.
I still I'd be against ruining that person's life, which is probably happening. I don't even know.
They brought the Motorola Razr back.
Oh, that old that used to be like the gold standard for like a stylish flip phone.
Yeah, I don't know what's different about it now, but I'm seeing it on here, and it is very expensive. Oh my goodness. Is this one of those things? Do they bring this back because it's like old and like that's like now in, you know?
Yeah, it's vintage.
Hey, this is like, dude. My biggest mistake I ever made was not keeping my N64 and my PS2, because I mean I feel like I could have sold them for hundreds of dollars.
It's exactly It's like bringing back the NES Classic and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I have an affinity for vintage tech.
If you had to guess how much the Razr costs, what would you guess?
It's the reissued one? Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't know. $500?
It is $1,500 for some reason.
What? Why?
I do not know why.
It doesn't have, like, the processing power, you know, like a new iPhone, but it's just a Razr.
It's the pocket-ready size of a flip phone fused with the intelligence of a modern smartphone. So it looks like it's a
flip. Exactly. I called it. I'm so fucking smart.
I think you flip it up and it becomes like looking like an iPhone kind of deal. Like it looks like if you flip it up, it has like the full screen, like touch screen. So
doesn't that sort of defeat the purpose?
I would think so, but
that's like putting like a brand new video game inside like a vintage arcade machine because you want to feel like you're playing the vintage arcade, but you're taking full advantage of all the same technology that's ruining our brains.
Mm-hmm. I would love it. I would honestly, that's one thing I'd never want to go backwards is these new video games. Like you play NHL 20 and like compare that to like, I don't know, like NHL Face Off 98 when it's like, it's not even like a contest, like which one is a better game, what is more fun, whatever. The biggest thing I love about all these, all the video games now though, is that some of these games, they get like actual actors to like play the characters.
Right, like a voice you recognize.
Yeah, and like L.A. Noire did this, like, I think, what, 2009, 2010?
Vice City did that. Remember Grand Theft Auto Vice City? They had Ray Liotta do the main character.
Which I didn't realize was him until like 3 years ago. I honestly had no idea because I just didn't, when I first played that game, I wasn't smart enough to like make those connections.
Right.
Like, oh, that's so and so. But like, well, they had that one game, which I forget what it was called, but it had Sean Ashmore playing like the main character as like the video game. Like, I don't know. I just think that's like a nice little added feature, but it's insane to me when I watch it. I go, that is an actual person. Like, they didn't draw this person up. Like, they, like, this is a real person they like made into a video game. So,
this new game coming out, Cyberpunk 2077, it's like the most anticipated like action RPG type game, which I'll probably end up getting it because that's my kind of game. I tend to go through phases where I'll play a game nonstop for 3 months and then not. Like, I remember I used to tell you how much I was playing Zelda Breath of the Wild. I haven't played it in like a month and a half now after playing it every day for 3 months straight. But anyway, that game's coming out. Like, Keanu Reeves is just straight up like in the game. Like, they animated him and everything. He's, like, in the game as a character.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that. I think I saw, like, that at, like, the advertisement for that.
Like, he's in, like, basically John Wick is, like, in the game.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It reminds me of, I mean, nothing to base this off of, but it reminds me of, like, Blade Runner kind of shit. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I am into this. I will absolutely play this.
Did you ever see the new Blade Runner that came out 4 years ago?
You know, I tried watching it back when I had HBO for a hot minute, and I tapped out. So I'll wait for it to be on a streaming service of some sort and pick it up from there.
I loved it. Yeah, I love it because I love the old Blade Runner. I like sci-fi and all that stuff. The one thing is it's like unnecessarily slow paced, which is probably what turned you off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the way, if you watch the whole movie, your reaction might be similar to mine, where like, well, I don't see any like scenes that they should have just taken out, but every scene could have just been like trimmed, so the movie is like, you know, 20-30 minutes shorter than it ended up being. But the visual effects and the music and the action and everything is all top notch, so I would recommend giving it another chance. I wish they would release a director's cut that's sort of like an anti-director's cut where they cut it down by half an hour. That might help, but really good movie. So starts this week's Sports on Sidelines Film Fest. We'll probably end up referencing like 15 movies by the end of the podcast. But there's our first one, Blade Runner 2049.
He says you Blade Runner. Love that scene. Love it. Love everything about it.
You seen the original Blade Runner?
Of course.
That's a movie where it's weird. The first time you see it, you don't really get it, but then you're like, but I am intrigued for some reason. Then you go back and watch it again, and you're like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Well, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but they put Total Recall is on Netflix now.
Dude, I saw that. That's on my watch list. That might be the next movie I watch. And the scene they use, you know how they use like a sample scene? Fucking terrifying! We were talking about this last week, where like your own body starts to turn on you, and this lady's like turning into a creature. And I'm like, oh my God, this poor woman! Then it turns out to be Arnold. I was like, okay.
They picked the perfect scene for that. It's fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic.
I remember I was at my friend's house. We were like six. Mm-hmm. We were they let us play by ourselves, which, you know, parents used to do, is they used to let kids play on their own and figure out problems on their own. But what we ended up doing was rummaging through the VHS tapes. Thank God we didn't find Backdoor Sluts 15 or something like that. But we found Total Recall, and we put it on. And the first scene, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like his like helmet breaks open while he's on Mars or something.
Oh yeah,
and like his eyes start popping out of his head. Yeah, we were mortified, probably scarred for life. His mom came in and yelled at us. And it's like, Lee, what do you want us to do?
Did you ever?
A bunch of two young boys being left alone. We're gonna break shit.
Yeah, that's like when I was like 10 or 11, we had HBO, and I would like be watching TV by myself, you know, it's midnight, and all of a sudden Real Sex would come on, or like Cat House or like one of these shows, and you'd like watch it on mute, trying to make sure no one's going to come down and see what you're watching. I don't know what I was watching. It was like the worst like softcore porn in the world. It's just like two adults like rubbing butts together, and you're like, oh, well, this isn't working. I don't know what that is. But I remember like HBO had all the, like those terrifying shows, and like those, they'd always play like a lot of like those movies and stuff, like especially like this era. I'm talking like 2002, 2003, like that's when they were starting to play a lot of those like late 80s, early 90s movies. And a lot of them were like really bad, but some of them were actually pretty good. But we had one where like I must have watched Ghostbusters 2 like 150 times because it was just always on. It was always on one of the HBOs.
Yeah.
So I almost love that movie more than Ghostbusters 1 because I saw it so many times. You know what I mean? Like, it was on. It was just more accessible. So the other thing was that they had a documentary, to your point, about being terrified of things. They had a documentary about cannibals, and I was like just afraid that. I was like, cannibals are in the everyday world. I got to not be around anyone I think is a cannibal.
Right. Yeah. Talk about something you want to social distance from. Someone who might eat you.
Exactly.
Speaking of eating, the Chiefs are eating themselves.
Yeah, how do you feel about them?
And obviously the fair reaction is like, well, what did you want the Chiefs to do? Like, what were the Chiefs supposed to do? They landed a franchise quarterback, and not only that, but maybe a guy who looks like he's on his way to being the best player of his generation, and a guy who's going to keep him in the Super Bowl conversation as long as he's there. So what did you want the Chiefs to do? But that, I mean, that's why I say it's probably on Patrick Mahomes if he wants to – make it as easy as them for possible to build a Super Bowl contender around him to maybe not take half a billion, but like at the same time, what do you want Patrick Mahomes to do? He's got his agent out there saying, you got to make him the highest paid player ever, which based on the whole market and everything like that, you pretty much have to. But I don't know. As a guy who's watched the Patriots for the last 20 years, make Tom Brady play hardball with Tom Brady and then Tom Brady would play ball with them and he would take just a little bit less and never truly be the highest paid guy, except for the exception of maybe a couple seasons. And those seasons didn't work out for them, coincidentally, perhaps. I think you have to still have like a strong middle class, and you have to have, obviously, the cap. Oh, cap space could be a number of different ways, but of course that's true, but you still want to maximize your ability to maneuver. And I feel like the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes just made it. If they want to have a dynasty, which is the word that's being thrown around, we're chasing that dynasty. If you really want to have a dynasty, you just made it very, very hard for yourselves. I think you just look at teams who have the highest paid quarterback and teams that made a guy one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league or gave him this giant signing bonus, a giant percentage of the cap relative to other players. It just hasn't worked out for them. And I think because Brady never really took a little bit less than the top of the market, they did do that with everybody else. They do that with everybody, the Patriots do. But I think their depth is a big reason why they won. Obviously, having Tom Brady and Bill Belichick is the number one reason that they won 6 Super Bowls, 1-9. And I think the Chiefs, the having Patrick Mahomes strategy is going to overcome a lot of problems that they're going to have with the cap. And being able to build a good enough team around him. And there are ways around that, and they're going to have to get creative like other teams have, which I can get into. But it's just hard. It's hard to commit that much money to one player, even if it is your quarterback and it's the best player in the league, to put enough around him. He's going to cover up for their flaws. They're going to be in the Super Bowl conversation most seasons. But I don't know. I have beyond the next 2 or 3 years, I have doubts about their ability to – you know, really push through and win another one.
Yeah, and this is where it comes back to sort of their drafting is going to have to be fantastic from now on. They've had some pretty good drafts. They got Mecole Hardman. He was their first pick last year because I believe they didn't have a first-round pick. But there's a guy they found outside of the first round who looks like he's going to be another one who, you know, is just a fantastic weapon, just a complete burner, can really kill you on offense. Mm-hmm. They got Tyreek Hill, obviously, was that 2016, 2015. He was towards the end of the draft. But they're going to have to hit on all of those guys now because you're not going to be able to pay all of them. So you kind of have to have that revolving door of pieces that work. And can they do it? I mean, it seems like they can do it on offense. Can they do it on defense? You know, that's sort of where I am now wondering that. I mean, this team they've had some problems with running backs in terms of finding – like the Kareem Hunt thing, obviously, like you couldn't predict that, but – you look at what they had last year, it's a revolving door of running back. So, again, maybe just focus on getting cheap production from that position. But for me, it's just about drafting and developing now, because you're going to have to move on from guys. You're going to have to be the Patriots now. Like, you are going to have to be able to look at your guys who have been productive for 5-6 years and say, sorry, you got to go now, because we're going to replace you with someone we found, you know, undrafted free agent or a sixth round pick. You're going to have to do that. And can you do that as good as some of these teams? Because that's great. You have him for 10 years, but if you don't have the pieces around him, drafting and signing and developing, whatever, it's kind of like, okay, well, good luck. You're going to get beat by a more complete team here in the divisional round of the AFC Championship game. But when it comes to the contract itself, I like it. I think he's worth it. I think, listen, he's 24-7 since coming into the league. He went to the AFC title game his first season as a starter. And if, you know, if the Chiefs aren't a billion miles off sides, he might win that game, you know? And then last year, he was great when he needed to be. So I think he's worth it. It's just, it's a lot of money for a long time. I think 10 years is what gets my sort of my eye up and saying that's a long time to be committed to a player, because so much can change.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a question of whether he's worth it or not, because he is worth it. It's just, is it the best way to build a team that you want to sustain success and win multiple Super Bowls, which seems like the goal. I think it was Chiefs King, or it's like Arrowhead Pride or something like that, tweeted, when you're about to win 13 Super Bowls in a row, with a nice dancing gif. And it's like, I know you're joking. I know nobody seriously believes that, but like, the general idea is you think, oh, we have Patrick Mahomes, we're all set. I'm going to tell you right now, as a guy who watched the Patriots for 20 years, it doesn't work that way. Patriots didn't win a Super Bowl until they were able to have other elite players around Tom Brady, however they got him, whether it was getting Darrelle Revis to sign for a little bit less than what he was worth at the time, or to find an affordable veteran who Bill says, I can get more out of him than this guy's team did, or find hidden gems in undrafted free agency, make a trade for a talented guy on his rookie deal like the Patriots did when they got Brandon Cooks. And there's other teams that have done that, and I've done the research on this, and I think the problem is more paying a guy at the top of the market when he isn't worth it. Because do you know who had the highest salary among quarterbacks last season? What's your guess?
My guess would be Russell Wilson.
No, it was Kirk Cousins. He made $27.5 million. I don't hate Kirk Cousins, but I think he's closer to average than elite. Mm-hmm. And the Vikings went 10-6 last year, fizzled out in the playoffs. And the highest cap hit in the league was Matthew Stafford, who had a cap hit of $30.7 million. And Detroit went 3-12-1. And I don't know how much of that was Matt Stafford's fault or Matt Patricia's fault. I don't follow the Lions. I don't cover the Lions. But I think that's the proof you need. At the end of the day, you care about wins and losses and winning in the playoffs and going to the Super Bowl. Do you know who the highest base salary in 2018 was?
I will say Breeze.
Kirk Cousins.
Oh.
And the Vikings went 8-7-1, came to Foxborough, got the shit kicked out of them because they're not as well coached as the Patriots and not as deep, because they're paying too much money to a quarterback who's not good enough to cover up for their flaws. The highest cap hit that year was Jimmy Garoppolo, thanks to that crazy extension they gave him, $37 million. They went 4-12 in Garoppolo's first full season as a starter. And I haven't really dug deep into last year's 49ers team. Well, obviously went to the Super Bowl, but I'm pretty sure they didn't have to pay too many other players. And they had good players either on their rookie deals or affordable deals, and they were able to surround Garoppolo with a lot of great talent cheaply. And I think that's why they turned things around there. Do you know who the highest paid quarterback in 2017 was?
I will go off the board here and say Tom Brady. I don't
Kirk know Cousins.
I'm going to the trend here.
Yeah, $23.9 million. Redskins went 7-9. Highest cap hit was Joe Flacco at $24.5 million. Baltimore did go 9-7, but they were the seventh seed. And you contrast that with last year's Ravens, who had Lamar Jackson play absolutely spectacularly. on his rookie contract. So that is the absolute most valuable thing you can have in this league, is an elite quarterback on a rookie contract, which the Chiefs had last year. So they were able to have guys like Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. When you have this incredible quarterback playing out of his mind for like 10 bucks, it was crazy. And they're going to have it for another couple of years. Cause I think like Mahomes cap pick goes up to like 24 million or something next year, which is totally manageable. 24 million isn't what it was like 3 years ago with Kirk Cousins, but it goes up to 42 million in 2023, 42 million. And I know the cap's going to go up, but you're still going to be devoting a huge chunk to that. And I think you're going to start seeing them have to peel players off their roster and get creative to find talent elsewhere. And I think all you have to do is point to the Atlanta Falcons as a good case study for that. They made Matt Ryan one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league recently. And you're starting to see the effects of that. And they also paid other players like Grady Jarrett and Julio Jones, obviously. But I think they're overspending, and you're starting to see the effects of that. They lost Austin Hooper to free agency. They lost Devontae Freeman, Desmond Trufant, Devondre Campbell, Vic Beasley. Three really good defense. They had basically gut their defense in order to keep all their guys on offense. So I think you're going to see maybe the Falcons will still be good on offense. They signed Todd Gurley, but they're going to have to win games 37-33. And like, I mean, we've seen how it goes when they have to hold a big lead in the Super Bowl. So, you know, good luck to them. And, I mean, the Seahawks are similar, but I give the Seahawks credit because they are run really well, I think, in their front office with John Sherman or something like that as their GM. And Pete Carroll knows what he's doing. He knows how to find value where other teams might not be able to. But they had to trade for Quentin Dunbar, who's a really good slot corner, because – they're getting up there against the cap because Russell Wilson's making so much money. And again, Russell Wilson's a guy who's worth it because he's awesome. I love Russell Wilson. But they're just you have to make sacrifices elsewhere at some point. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And I know we talk about the time of the deal. I think every contract I look at it is like the realistic possibility is you'll only get through 50-60% of it before either you have to move on or restructure. There are going to be restructures, but that's just the reality of the work they've made for themselves. And there's going to be years coming up here. Just get ready for it, Chiefs. There's going to be years where you're going to have to let good players go, and you have to hope that they find a suitable replacement in the draft immediately. Within 1 or 2 years, the guy can step in. And you're going to have years where Patrick Mahomes is going to be either throwing to no-name receivers or just covering up for your flaws because he's so effing good and he's outscoring other teams, but the defense sucks. And there's going to be years where you're going to think they're a top Super Bowl contender, but all of a sudden they're going to fall flat on their faces in the playoffs because they ran into a more balanced team. Which, honestly, I thought that's what was going to happen to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl against the 49ers.
Yeah.
You know, they were about 50 minutes on their way to that, but then Patrick Mahomes did the Patrick Mahomes things. So, you know, maybe he will be able to get them over the hump and win them a Super Bowl, basically carrying the team. We saw this show with Peyton Manning over and over again. Peyton Manning insisted on being the highest paid guy, and they only won the Super Bowl when they had a more balanced team.
Yeah, I mean, when they won the Super Bowl, the Denver Manning anyways, it was on defense. It wasn't him. It was the defense finally doing something. And honestly, these points that you've made here are fantastic. And it sort of, in a way, reminds me of what the Patriots had to do this past offseason. Whether it was by design or not, they have this Tom Brady, you know, looming cap hit, looming departure, and they also lost guys on defense. You know, they also lost Kyle Van Noy, Jamie Collins. Again, maybe that was part of it, right? Maybe they never wanted to pay these guys. But in an ideal world, they probably want to keep Van Noy around for the year or two, but they couldn't. They couldn't do that contract, and that's going to happen to Kansas City. So they're going to have to rely on sort of becoming the Patriots here, right? And hoping that guys want to go there and play with Patrick Mahomes for a little bit less than what they get anywhere else.
That's going to happen. They are going to get, like, veteran offensive guys who want to play with Patrick. Like, you're going to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, especially I think in that division where if you buy in, like, I'm buying in on the Broncos. I don't know if they're going to be a great team, but I buy in the idea that their stock is trending upward now. You know, I like what it's Drew Lock right now. I think, but I'm not worried about that. I look at the guys that they drafted as receivers to put around him. I think that is a sign of
Cortland Sutton's a good receiver. Did they get Jerry Judy?
Yeah, they did. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
They got another guy in the draft too. I smell what you're cooking here. But that's a team I think it's on the rise. The Chargers, that's a team that could be coming back at some point too. Like, and again, just the division and the conference, they're gonna have the work cut out for them. So I hope their scouting department's ready, and I hope the guy they have in the front office who's, you know, managing all the bonuses and the restructures, I hope he's capable, because it's gonna take an awful lot to keep this team as good as they were this year for the next 5 to 7 years.
Yeah. They're gonna have to do things like the Patriots and Seahawks are doing to truly be Super Bowl contenders. And Patrick Mahomes is gonna cover up a lot of flaws, a lot of downsides and drawbacks the team's gonna have, taking them into the playoffs, but then they'll find out exactly where their flaws were and why, and they're gonna be like, why didn't you address this? And it's gonna be like, well, you're paying one player a gajillion bajillion dollars and he's great, but he's not, you can't win with one player in National Football League. It's the ultimate team sport. I feel it's different from any other sport. Like basketball, you can't give Jason Tatum as much money as he wants, because you have to have that guy or you're screwed. And I just don't think, I mean, I feel like it's sort of the same principle in the NFL, but you don't need Patrick Mahomes. You don't need the best quarterback. You do need a good quarterback. You need a quarterback who can not make mistakes, make plays when you need him to, and can just be generally good and have a good balanced team around him, which I think is what you saw with the 2018 Patriots, where it wasn't Tom Brady's best season, but he made the big plays at the end when they needed him to, and the defense and special teams was unbelievable. So I think it's going to be a while before we see something like that with the Chiefs. We're going to see years where the Chiefs look like the Patriots did in, 2010, 2011. That's my prediction there. And if I run this through the hot take generator, I'll say, the Chiefs will never win a Super Bowl again with Patrick Mahomes. Like, I don't know if someone out there said that, but that's what people are going to perceive it, because we're in the honeymoon phase with Patrick Mahomes still. People still love him. I don't hate him. I don't dislike Patrick Mahomes. He's awesome. He should be the face of the league. He should be the highest paid player. He's really fun to watch. I'm just saying, practically speaking, if the goal is to win multiple Super Bowls, it's a huge challenge when you commit too much money to one guy, whether you're talking about real money, cap money, whatever it is. And Tom Brady had the highest highest cap hit in 2010. Which was 20.3 million was the highest cap hit back then, which tells you how much it's changed money wise. And what happened in 2010? They lost to the goddamn Jets at Mark Sanchez at home. Mark Sanchez, who, by the way, was the highest paid quarterback in the league in 2011.
I don't believe that. I refuse to believe that.
The last 4 years, the highest salary quarterback has been Kirk Cousins. 2 years before that was Jay Cutler. You got 2 years of Peyton Manning in between there, and then Mark Sanchez. So the problem is probably paying too much to a quarterback who sucks, or it was just not worth it. Patrick Mahomes is worth it. So that's why we are going to see the Chiefs in the mix and in the Super Bowl hunt. Just don't act shocked when they have to let good players go. They can't pay Tyreek Hill that $17 million or whatever the hell he's going to make once he's a free agent. Like, it's going to happen. You have to invest, like you said, you have to invest in the draft, scouting, development, all that stuff, because you're going to have to find good players cheap. You're going to have to find a balanced team affordably because you decided to break the bank for one guy. I think that's just their reality.
Yeah, and it's not – I think that when you say that, people are going to look at you and say, how could you possibly say that? They're so good. We're not saying they're not going to be good. We're just saying that there are so many problems that are going to arise out of this, 4 to 5 years, because to your point, the bill always comes due, right? You have to pay it at some point. It's just, how do you do it? Like, do you restructure, or do you let guys walk? Do you have to make some trades that are going to hurt you more than they're going to help you, in the immediate sort of time frame there? But again, that's where you rely on your front office to do their job. And to this point, I think that the Chiefs, you look at some of the guys, again, we mentioned some of the names earlier, but you look at some of the guys they've drafted, it gives you reason for hope or optimism, I guess, if you're a Chiefs fan. But again, it's that workload, you know, it's sort of like when you have those drafts and you find those players, you can kind of take your foot off the gas and say, oh, we got those players. That buys us this window. No, now you have to consistently hit on that. You can't have down years. You have to find that guy in every single draft now. So, yeah. And that's hard to do. The Patriots know that more than anyone else, that is hard to do. So, hey, enjoy it while you got it, but it is going to get a little dicey there for sure.
Yeah, the Bills are coming due for the Patriots this year. They're completely up against the cap. They just made Rex Burkhead take a pay cut. And, like, you know, a bunch of assholes. Not assholes, but a bunch of people are like, I hate it, Mike! Because they don't understand. It's like, guys, wasn't Burkhead, like, their best all-around running back last year, first of all? Which I'm not saying he's going to be this year, but it's like, why do people get so mad about something that's so, like, relatively inconsequential?
Everyone hates Sony Michel, but Rex Burkhead takes less money to still be here, and everyone's like, I don't like that either. It's like, well, what do you like? You need to like something. You can't hate everything. Yeah, that's like not nothing. How this works.
Nothing. And they probably hate Damian Harris because he didn't play as a rookie. But again, to my point, Patriots have found a way to get value while having not much to work with. They got Cam Newton for $1 million. And Bill Belichick is basically betting on himself that I can coach Cam Newton up, get him to pick up as much as he can in one season, and we'll keep the machine rolling. And it's good to see, you know, Cam Newton's already getting in the playbook, which is good. I don't know if you saw his Instagram post. He's like, this shit's calculus. It's like, yeah, it's a little complicated. Maybe with Brady around, it was a little too complicated. The thing with Brady is, like, I wonder if it was just like a sort of like a quirk with Brady that like he had to do all his little hand signals because he didn't want to like – it was a whole thing where he didn't want to give too much away to the opponent. So he makes up his own like, you know, like makes the little sign to the guy or just looks at him a certain way. But if you don't pick up on that, he throws a tantrum and doesn't want to work with you anymore. It's like, what was that? Was that your index finger, two finger? What are you doing? I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know. Maybe he can simplify it in that way. But, like, yeah, he's going to have to pick up the verbiage and the concepts and all that stuff. I think where some people got it a little wrong, and it's, you know, no disrespect if you're getting it wrong, but people are saying, like, I think they're going to run the same exact system, and Cam Newton can't fit in the system. They're going to say, see you later. And I don't think that's how they operate. I think Bill Belichick wants – I think it's the other way around. I think he wants the system to fit the players. He doesn't want the players to fit the system. He's going to figure out a way for the system to be a good fit for Cam Newton, which means you're going to see a little bit of a different look to the offense because he's a completely different kind of player than Tom Brady is and even Jarrett Stidham. So that's just my two cents on Cam Newton and the system and all that stuff.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that there's enough things here that will make him feel familiar, you know, that will allow this to be an easy transition for him. We talked about this last week, but Julian Edelman is the best receiver he's had since Steve Smith. I'm totally 100% okay saying
that. He definitely is.
And they're not the same. I think people look at the heights and the weights and say, okay, they're the same.
Call him Benjamin Barrett, he's 6'5".
And he was 3,000 pounds. He was basically the great
college. Okay, he looks like a hippo. He's better.
He had feet for hands. Like, no. Like, absolutely not. And I think that White – people are going to say I'm trying to say James White is Christian McCaffrey. I am not. I'm just saying he has similar capabilities in the passing game as a pass-catching running back that I think will help them – help Newton, I should say, transition to New England a little bit easier than people are sort of giving credit to. I think out of the gate so far.
There's a great clip out there of Cam Newton in a game where I forget who it was who tweeted. I might have to tweet it later for people who are listening right now. It was a play. It was just a simple play, but they're in the red zone. They're on like the five. They're lining up. Christian McCaffrey's splitting out in motion, and one of their cornerbacks is like, watch the wheel. It's the wheel. And then they cuts to Cam Newton, and he points at the guy. He's like, oh, you've been watching film too, huh? Oh, that's cool. Watch this. Snaps the ball. It's not a wheel route. He goes out for the wheel, but then cuts back into the middle. Cam Newton drops back, makes a simple little pass over the middle, touchdown. And I was like, that got me. That was sexy. That got me all hot and bothered. Just like, you've been doing your homework? Yeah, so have I. Watch this, motherfucker. Shoves it up their ass. And it was just like a simple play. But like, But that's teamwork. That's studying the playbook. That's watching film. That's preparing. That's being one step ahead of your opponent. I was like, okay, this is – not that I didn't think Cam Newton was that kind of quarterback, but that kind of clip is what gives you a lot of confidence. We're like, all right, if he just listens to Belichick and starts doing shit like that, the offense could be fun to watch. It could be back to being the high scoring offense that we were used to seeing for a long time. It might look a little different aesthetically, but he puts the work in, takes the coaching, stays healthy. I think he's going to play really well. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I believe that too. And the biggest issue is, you just said it, is health. I mean, if he's healthy, you're getting a serviceable quarterback. I would say that you're getting, if he's healthy, you're getting a top 50% of the league quarterback, like top 16. I would honestly say that. I would be comfortable saying that he would be in the top half of the league in terms of
definitely top half. Yeah, I think, yeah, I would have, like, had him top 10 most years.
That's what I'm saying. He would push, you know, for maybe being the top 8, top 9, around there. So you're not going from the best ever to the absolute worst. It's just the qualifier is a heavy one. And it's him being healthy, something that he hasn't been for 2 seasons now. You look at his numbers when he suffered the shoulder injury in 2018, they kind of tanked from there on out. He lost, I think, his final 6 starts of the season. And then you look at what happened last year. He injures his foot in Foxborough. He comes back for the start of the regular season, plays 2 games, and he's done for the season. And, you know, those are some obvious issues there. Just the general sort of availability, right, so to speak, is an issue. But I do think that if he's healthy, if he stays upright, and again, I think this is, for all the issues the Patriots had on their line last year, I think this will be the best line that he's played on. I think Carolina pretty much always had a bad line. He always got killed, you know, yeah. And if that happens, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised what you see from him. And it's a risk-free deal. It honestly is. And $1 million.
What are you talking about? How can you say no risk? How do you say no risk?
I don't know how people are saying there is a risk. How is there a risk? What is the risk?
We talked about it last week. You don't remember?
I don't remember.
The risk is yesterday. The risk is they remake the offense to build it around him. Then he gets hurt. And then all of a sudden they have to go back and rebuild and make over the offense back for Jarrett Stidham.
It's no risk. That's no the risk.
Is there any risk? No. That's the only risk, but I mean, but you're making a lot of assumptions there.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I'll go with Occam's razor, yeah, which you go with the fewest assumptions, which is, I think, the only assumptions you have to make for Cam Newton having a good season is staying healthy and listening to what Bill Belichick says. That's all you got to – all that needs to happen, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole idea of rebuilding the – okay, well, are they going to build it around the rookie anyway? You know what I mean? Like, I don't
– rebuild might be strong. I'm going to say they're not going to tear it all down like a revolution or whatever. But I don't think it would look exactly the same. Like, I don't think the transition from Cam Newton to Jarrett Stidham would be the same as, like, going from Brady to Garoppolo 4 years ago. It would be like going from Garoppolo to Brissett 4 years ago, if you remember that.
Yeah, and I love – the idea what the Patriots are doing here, is that they're saying, okay, here's one year of Cam Newton. By the way, if he's great and we love it, we can franchise him, or we can move on and give the keys to Stidham. I think that they've positioned themselves very well here. You know, it's sort of like they've regained some of the leverage that they lost with Tom Brady's contract last year, which was brutal. It was brutal to live through that. Live through a whole year knowing that a guy is unhappy, he wants more. Oh, and by the way, he can leave and you can't do anything about it. Like, last year had this overwhelming cloud of negativity over it. And that sounds crazy because the team was pretty good. But you kind of always had that thought in the back of your mind that, okay, this is not going to work, or this guy's gone. And we've talked about this before, that last year was an unenjoyable experience as a Patriots fan because there was just so much heaviness around that situation.
I think some of that might have emanated from our own station here.
Yeah,
positive.
Whatever.
Energy.
But I do think that it didn't help that you had the post game press conferences with Brady where he looked
bad energy.
Yeah, just bad energy, right? Bad vibes was the way I'd put it. And yeah, so to kind of get away from that and to kind of have the ability to say, okay, we're taking a flyer on this guy, and if it works, we can keep him around. But if it doesn't, we still believe in this player here, you know, that guy being Jared Stidham, that he can be what we need him to be. I just think that they've done a great job here of restocking their options.
Yeah, without question. I mean, yeah. I didn't mean to jump on you for a word choice, which I hate it when people do that. But, yeah, I'd say the risk is minimal. That would be the word I would go with. Minimal risk. Obviously no financial risk. But think that leaving the franchise, I guess, is interesting. But I think they would only franchise him if they intended to trade him to a team that will give him an extension. You know, so they can get a better – they get a first-round pick as opposed to, like, a compensatory third. I guess that would be the idea there.
Which the NFL will take away anyways.
They'll take away
– the damage has been done, my friend.
Take it away because Bill Belichick's walking around the locker room with a PKE meter from Ghostbusters. See, Zool's
presence here. The best part about that whole thing last year with the filming, the Bengals, is just the guy who catches the Patriots. He's like, I want to know everything about him because he makes me laugh so much. He's like, oh, yeah, filming the sideline, huh? He's like, well, it is too late for that, my friend. Like, he was just he's basically like a character that, like, you pull a string and he has five catchphrases. Like, everything he said reminded me of, like, something a toy would say.
He might as well have been filming them with his own iPhone at that point, because I'm not going to post this to my 600 Twitter followers. I'm putting this on Facebook. You're in big trouble, mister. That's like, that was the vibe he was giving off.
Oh, yeah. I'm hopeful about this team. I had them at 10-6, 11-5. I actually had them at, I think I said 11-5, like a crazy person, even with Stidham as the quarterback. I'm still sticking with that. I just think that they're in a much better position now if Jared Stidham actually kind of sucks with Cam Newton here than Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer was nice guy, but, I mean, 8-8, 9-7. Like, you're looking at that, I think, as the ceiling if he was the starter for a full 16.
Probably. You want a bold prediction? I'll go 12-4.
12-4.
This goes back to an argument I've been making all offseason. They went 12-4 last year with a passing offense that was the bottom third of the league, statistically. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they had the greatest quarterback of all time, and he limited turnovers, and guys weren't getting open. It wasn't all Brady's fault that the offense sucked. But they're going from a guy who didn't want to be here, knew it was his last season, and was giving off that negative energy, to a guy who was motivated. He's happy to have an opportunity. Still, he's by far the most athletically gifted quarterback on their roster, and still one of the most physically gifted quarterbacks in the league. And so, obviously, this is assuming health. But I'm going to say the offense is going to be better. They're going to score more points, is what I'm saying. I don't know if it's going to look the same, or maybe we'll see more bad interceptions with Cam Newton because he's not the most accurate passer. There'll probably be plays where he just heaves it down the field and gets an interception. You'll see more of that than we saw with Tom Brady. But I think overall they're going to score more points. The offensive line is going to be better, like you said. I think N'Keal Harry, like we talked about last week, is better suited to playing with Cam Newton than with Tom Brady. I love the two tight ends they picked up. I mean, I don't talk about how much I like or love prospects going into the draft because I really have no clue. Usually wait until after the fact, after they pick the guy, do my research, figure out who I like and do not like. I loved the Dalton Keene pick. I think people say they reach for him, but I think he's going to turn out to be a good value there. Devin Asiasi is another, like, athletically gifted tight end with good hands, and I think they're going to be making contributions. Hopefully Sony Michel has his best season yet. We'll see. He's another guy that's going to stay healthy. I don't think we've heard anything about him having to have a knee scope or anything like that, but yeah, I think the defense might be worse than last year. They might not be the best defense in the league, but they're still going to be very, very good, I think.
Yeah, it's great secondary.
Special teams are still going to be dominant. They're going to win the field position battle. And Bill Belichick is going to coach circles around guys for the most part. So I think that's how it's going to be. I'm going 12-4.
Yeah, the biggest difference for me when we talk about last year versus this year, like in the offense, the defense, is that the schedule is harder this year. You know, that's the one thing that I kind of – that's why I'm going 11-5. It's just I think that this schedule will lead to at least one
one extra loss, just given the caliber of the competition. But when I wrote that, when I felt that way, I was assuming we're talking full buildings for the NFL, which I don't think is going to be the case. I think we'd all agree by now. The Ravens, and I don't know if you saw that announcement, what the Ravens did. The Ravens announced that their stadium, they're only going to have under 15,000 people there if they do open the doors this season. So that changes, assuming that is a league-wide sort of mandate or change, that changes playing in Seattle and playing in Kansas City. That drastically changes those games. So maybe those games that I thought were going to be losses are now going to be wins.
That's true. You're taking a player off the field in Seattle.
Yeah.
Man, you're taking a player off the field.
Shout out to the 12. Go Hawks.
Mike Hurley. Hurley, are you listening? You got to write a call about this. The Seahawks are going to lose a whole player. That's not going to be fair.
Exactly. And so I look at that and say that can change things. But I do, to your point, the defense, the secondary is still great. I just think that you're going to have some growing pains with that front seven still, and we'll see what they can do. But this is the most excited I've been for a Patriots season in a very long time. I think there's just so many new pieces, so many new young faces or guys that are going to take that next step, or you want to see take that next step. I'm actually very excited. And naturally, this is the season where we don't know if we're going to get a preseason, and we don't know if the game's going to start, and we don't know if there's going to be fans there. It's like, oh, cool. The season that I'm very excited about is now not going to happen. Maybe.
Yeah. It's a lot of variables.
Fun times USA.
Yeah, that's another reason why like Newton might have a leg up on Stidham, because it sucks for Stidham that they would have to make him the starter for the first time in his career when he basically didn't really have a real offseason as far as workouts are concerned. On the schedule, I'm going to refer to an article I read that was really good. It was written by a very smart, very talented, very handsome writer. His name's Ty Anderson.
Ah.
You've heard of this guy? He somehow slithered out of Chelsea to make a career for himself in sports writing. He wrote a very good article one time. The headline was, "The Patriots don't have easy schedules. They make hard schedules look easy." And so I'm going to go with your general argument there. I'm going to say they're going to make the schedule look easy. I think there's going to be times where, again, Bill Belichick is going to – there's going to be this big, bad, talented, we got a better talented team, and Bill Belichick just shits down the guy's throat coaching-wise. Like, I feel like there's going to be games like that. I'm not thinking of the schedule off the top of my head, but they're playing the NFC West. Yeah, the Rams are going to get killed. Rams are going to come here and get killed. 49ers are going to come here and get shut down. That's my prediction. They have to go to Seattle, so they're going to be playing Seattle. Seattle's going to be shorthanded. So I don't know. I love their chances there. Kansas City's another one. They have good crowd noise.
Yeah, oh yeah. So absolutely.
But you know, they have the best player in the universe. So.
So I actually looked this up when I was doing research here for this upcoming season. I remember telling you this. The last time the Patriots lost a 1 p.m. Boston time kickoff to a team from either the AFC or NFC West was all the way back in September 2012 when they lost to the Cardinals 20-18. Since then, they have rattled off 5 straight victories, 6 if you include the divisional round against the Chargers back in 2018, against West-based opponents in this scenario. And the Patriots have – off the top of my head, they have the Raiders, they have the Broncos, and they have the Cardinals all coming here for 1 p.m. Boston kickoffs. So, you know, 10 a.m., 11 a.m., you know, their body clock. That is an actual advantage for the Patriots. That is – the numbers back that up. That is a difficult time for a lot of these teams to come to New England. And if you have 3 of those games, which, the Patriots do, I kind of like your chances of going 3-0 there, running the table, no matter what that roster looks like. And those are games that are winnable anyways. The Cardinals, they got DeAndre Hopkins, but you know, I that would be that game against the Cardinals. If I'm correct here, would be at the end of playing Baltimore and then Houston. So Kyler Murray is not going to throw many surprises.
Here's another prediction. Kyler Murray is going to be the new Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be the MVP candidate. and everyone's gonna be pleasuring themselves Kyler Murray highlights. Maybe me too. And then, but then they'll end up playing the Patriots. They'll get fucking completely shut down by the defense, and everyone will be like, "Oh my god, are they cheating? How'd that happen?" You know, like that's another thing that's absolutely gonna happen. Bill Belichick does that better than anybody's. Look at this high powered offense. Get some schemes ready for you. You know, it's like that is absolutely gonna happen with some of these.
Yeah,
I'm still sticking with a 12-4 record because they still have the best advantage. Well, I guess Patrick Mahomes might technically the best advantage that any team has in the league, but the coaching advantage with Belichick against everyone else is absurd. Still, I think.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and I think that this schedule is set up for them, to really sort of, I think, maximize what they have either with Newton or with Stidham. If it's Stidham, he begins his career with two road games. Against the Seahawks and the Chiefs. I mean, that's talk about, you know, going right to the Wolves there right away, and you're going to be better off for that. And I think that the schedule I just mentioned ramps up in the middle when you have Baltimore, Houston, and Arizona in back-to-back-to-back weeks. I think that'll bring the best out of you. The L.A. trip, you have it. You're not going back there on alternating weeks. You're banging out all in one. And you're going to do it in 1 week, too. And then you end with the three straight division games. I think that this is going to work for them. I really do. I think that they've positioned themselves well here to be an 11-win, 12-win in your case team. I really do. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating season. Especially, I thought it was going to be fascinating even if they had Jarrett Stidham. But I mean, Cam Newton obviously changes things. How do you feel about the hockey team before we depart for the day? Has anything changed in the past week?
No, I think they're going to be able to do this now that they're abandoning the United States of America, which is the smartest thing to do right now. I think that this is going to work.
Yeah, we're going to give single payer healthcare a little trial run there, if you don't mind.
Yeah, and Toronto is set up well here. I think that if have you ever been to Toronto?
No, I've been to Montreal and Quebec City.
Toronto is a gigantic, gigantic city. And
it's like New York, basically. It's like the New York of Canada, basically. That's how I always viewed it.
Yeah, and they have a lot of different sort of areas and whatnot. So the idea of the campus being near Hotel X and being near Coca-Cola Field and the Raptors training facility and there's the BMO Field with the Raptors. I'm sorry, where Toronto FC plays. It makes sense. They can pull that off, I think. And so I think that'll be good for the league. I think it'll work. I think Edmonton's going to work just fine, too. You look at Edmonton's case rates for June. They were ridiculously low.
Isn't there nothing there, basically? Isn't Edmonton like a small town?
Not densely populated? They have the Burlington Mall, basically. I just think that
these Pittsfield, Massachusetts of Canada.
I mean, basically, I've never been. I just know that.
I've never been to Pittsfield either. I'm talking out of my ass.
It wasn't high up on the list of places that they want to go. I would imagine, but again, if it is what gets the season done, I think they're going to be happy about it. And what I find most fascinating or most exciting about this is the fact that Gary Bettman is doing laps around every other commissioner right now.
Isn't that funny?
Crazy.
That guy sucks.
Crazy. So not only do they have a return to play plan that makes sense, but they get a CBA extension out of it, and they're going back to the Olympics, and like they're gonna tweak the entry level contracts, and like it's just like the and players are gonna get traded with no trades, but their no trades are still gonna be effective after they're traded. It's like. It's crazy to me
how they've been able to do this. All the other commissioners, it's like you're losing to this guy. Like, this guy sucks.
This guy
nobody likes him.
Who trembles when he's on a microphone for some reason.
Comes out with the Stanley Cup to the inevitable Bulls. Yes, bring it on. I like it. I'm definitely not shitting in a catheter right now.
I can't believe that. Well, I'm very happy. I think what I'm most happy about, honestly, is listen, I want this season to be finished. If it doesn't, I'll be pretty bummed because I think the Bruins had a great chance of winning the Stanley Cup. But what I'm most excited about, honestly, is the fact that the NHL players are going to be going back to the Olympics. Because if you're an American right now, this is the best time for America to have their players in the Olympics. You have Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews, Johnny Gaudreau, Patrick Kane still, Blake Wheeler still. In net, you have John Gibson or Connor Hellebuyck. On defense. On defense, you're probably talking about
Jack Hughes.
You have Jack Hughes as well. On defense, you have John Carlson. You probably by 2022 are talking Charlie McAvoy as well. There's so many players. I know I'm probably forgetting a few of them, but
no. But the point they should go for it while they still have guys like Patrick Kane and supplementing all these young studs coming up.
Yeah, and Dylan Larkin is another one. JT Miller, another one. There's so many guys that you look at and you say, "Oh my God, this is a good Team USA. You want to see this Team USA in the Olympics." So as fun as Ryan Donato was back in 2018, gave us something to write about and talk about. I want to see the best of the best play in the Olympics, and I think a Team USA versus Team Canada game in 2022 is going to be fantastic viewing, and it will beat the hell out of the World Cup of Hockey, which was fun, but too gimmicky for my liking with Team Europe and Team North America.
It's
and
like
all
the
that.
World Baseball Classic. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's smart, too, for the NHL to say, we have strong Americans, so that will get the U.S. fan base interested. And we're going to China, which will get our game on the map over there more. So smart move by the NHL, a league that is often prone to making terrible, terrible moves. So
yeah.
I love it. I'm excited.
I think it's the far of the virus, too. I think the players will be more apt to just go in line with whatever they're doing because they will say things like, you know, I just want to play. I'll do whatever it takes to be able to get back to playing. And it's not like this fake I want to play that you get from, like, the baseball players. Like, yeah, we just want to play, man. But only under every single term that we ask for, we're going to throw a fit and spit on you if you don't give it to us.
Yeah.
I think NHL players look out for each other better than pretty much any other league is the way I would put it.
Yeah, and there's also, I believe, that there's a rule they put in place here where if guys are caught violating the rules, their teams are subject to fines or maybe losing draft picks. And that's the quickest way if you're an NHL player to find yourself banished to the KHL. If you cost your team a draft pick or a heavy fine because, you know, you wanted to hook up with someone in Toronto and leave the bubble, that is not good. And so I do think this gets off eventually. We'll see when the exact start date is. I'm still curious to see if it is indeed August 1st or if, you know, they have a breakout of some sort that pauses things. But I think this is going to work. I really do. I think that they're going to be able to pull it off. And again, to your point, the guys who are gamers are going to be fine and staggering the schedule here. So you have games basically for 13 hours a day. It's going to be pretty wild to watch. I'm kind of excited. I'm excited to see this all play out. I mean, I was excited to cover an empty net. I mean, I'm sorry, an empty arena game. Or just see one on TV. Remember that Bruins game against the Sabres was going to go on without fans. And I was like, I want to see what this looks like. Didn't happen, obviously. But or the game against the Sharks was going to go on without fans. I wanted to see what it looked like, obviously. We didn't get that. But this is going to be very entertaining and exciting to watch, I think.
I agree. Excited for hockey to come back, whatever form it's in. All right, we can leave it at that. That hour kind of flew by. We had some good conversations there.
Yeah, not
flew
bad.
By. If you made it
not
this
bad
far.
For a couple of bums.
Yeah, if you made it this far, thanks. I love you. I'm gonna turn my churn out my Patrick Mahomes thoughts into a column on 98.5thesportshub.com. So look out for that. It's gonna come out either later today, which is Wednesday, or maybe Thursday morning. We'll see. I think I'm gonna make a very well reasoned argument for why it's gonna be very hard for the Chiefs to get their precious dynasty because of what they just did to their financials. But yeah, thanks for listening. It's the Sports Hub Sidelines podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.